This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
It is the Hoffman Show on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And Anthony, this weekend, the quarterbacks, they're going to be under some pressure. We're going to find out just how well Jaden Daniels feels and deals with pressure. And depending on how that goes, we could be entering the final weeks of being able to use that hour opener. I mean, we could always use it for posterity. Arguing with Paulie is, you know, a national pastime. But Anthony, the idea that the best quarterback that's been here in the last 30 years is Kirk Cousins by far, which is who that hour opener that you just heard is about. And the idea that, the rest of these guys can't even get into pressure. Commanders have got themselves into some form of pressure, about as much pressure as you can get to in October this weekend. The real pressure awaits in November and December and hopefully January and ultimately February. But Anthony, I do believe that there's a bit of a fight on their hands this weekend with the old Baltimore Ravens. And I actually think one of the headlines is more true than typically is when a matchup like this happens.
Which headline are we speaking of?
Lamar Jackson versus Jaden Daniels.
Ooh.
Because most of the time when people say that, there, Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes. And it's like, you know who's never going to be on the field at the same time? Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. Now, I'm not telling you that secretly Jaden Daniels is about to play defense. No, no. Nor am I about telling you that secretly Lamar Jackson is about to play defense. No, no. That's not what I mean. But I do think in this game on Sunday, the game flow is so obscenely important. Because for all of the tests that the Commanders have passed, they have not, in the second half of any game, had to deal with, especially defensively, being down. What happens when a team just lines up and tries to ram the football down your throat? What happens when that then exposes you to potential play-action shots because you're dedicated to the run because you're trying to be aggressive and get the ball back? What does it mean offensively for Jaden Daniels and company if they no longer feel like they can be quite as balanced? Because I do believe that Cliff Kingsbury and Dan Quinn would stay balanced until you absolutely just have to start kind of chucking it. And you're, you know, the point of the basketball game where you have to shoot threes. But, you know, keep attacking the basket. Stay disciplined. That, in the football, just run, you know, keep running the football. Just keep them honest. But we know that this team would rather be run first and play a lot of the short stuff and then wait for their opportunities to take shots downfield. They don't want to force anything. So what happens if they're in a game flow situation where they're not up or tied in the second half, where they're chasing the game? That is one of the tests outside of the ones that just naturally come with time because, oh, well, can they continue to adapt week over week? Well, they can't prove that until they do it. But I think in that way, the Lamar Jackson versus Jaden Daniels matchup is far more real this week because they really are trying to push each other into a place they don't want to be. Because, by the way, Lamar Jackson also is as great as he has become as a passer, would much prefer to be in a balanced game flow where he doesn't have to make a ton of throws. He can make big explosive plays. And in many ways, the way that Lamar plays is how Jaden played last week, where it's not the most consistent from the pocket. It's not just, hey, we're going to dink and dunk and operate and drop back all day long in the way that a Joe Burrow or even a Mahomes can do. But he'll find big explosive plays to make up for some of the inaccuracy along the way or some of the misreads. And obviously, explosive plays with his arm. He's a good downfield thrower. They have good concepts to take advantage of certain things. And he is the best running quarterback in the sport, however many years he's been in the league running. And so, if Lamar feels like he's got to sit back and pass, can he do it? Yeah. Ask the Bengals. That's what he did last week. And they scored ultimately 41. Obviously, some of that coming in overtime. But 38 in regulation. And that Cincinnati defense is fairly awful, but they played better last week than they had previously. But can he do it against a Washington defense that may have found itself a little bit? Like, this is the question. And so I think, unlike a lot of times where we have these quarterback marquee matchups, and like, they're exciting to watch. I'm not trying to diminish that. You know, every time we hype up any of these MVP level guys facing off, that we shouldn't get excited. I just think this week, with the way that these teams want to play, if one of them can force the issue upon the other one, that becomes a much bigger impact on the outcome than some, I would say, more mature football teams that can win multiple ways or have proven they can win multiple ways, a la, say, the Kansas City Chiefs over the years.
I feel like when we, I guess, preview this game, the headline is Lamar versus Jaden, but I feel as though, when we look at the two quarterbacks, I feel as though Lamar, I don't know, I guess where he's come from, we've seen how early in his career he wasn't able to, you know, beat everybody from the pocket. He wasn't able to do that. And I just feel like the trajectory of his career has allowed him to, you know, find ways to, you know, beat us more than one way. He could lean on the run game. He could beat us from the pocket. And I think last week we saw him do just that. You know, they didn't have two safeties over the top. They had one safety over the top and a lot of people in the box trying to stop Derrick Henry. And he proved to everybody that he could, you know, beat us from the pocket. So I think we're just excited to see two playmakers, to be honest, go out there and just, you know, put their best foot forward. I think Jaden, he's shown that, you know, he can lean on the quick game, the run game, but he's also shown that he can, you know, extend the play and, you know, make explosive plays. So
for sure. And maybe he can, but like, what happens again when the game flow is a little bit different? Now, I would say the Cincinnati game is the closest we've gotten to something like that. And yeah, he needed to make big plays and he did. He was unbelievable. The chances that he could go 90% again are probably not very good because, again, like, that's not a thing you do in the NFL. There's a reason that was a record. And so I'm excited to see how it plays out. I do have a lot of faith in Jaden to live up to the moment. It is going to be really interesting, though, because Washington, obviously, some run defense issues. Baltimore's pass defense is ranked 31st in the league. So there is a lot here. As for the last word on this, before we get to a great conversation with Ben Solak from ESPN coming up at 4:15 and tell you what else we got coming up on the show. Dan Quinn was asked today about the Jaden versus Lamar matchup.
Yeah, they're not playing against each other. Both of them would be great cornerbacks. There's no question about it. But like, they're not playing against each other. Both of them are fantastic players and cause all sorts of problems for defensive coaches. But both of them would probably tell you they got to control what they can, you know, and how well they can play and going to do that. So I respect the storyline for you. But at the end of it, man, like, he's got to absolutely, you know, do his thing and play in the position. And that's what's really cool for us to see, the development at the position. Sometimes that doesn't show up on just a throw. It's checking into, you know, a play against a blitz. It's, you know, checking into a third down play on a screen to Austin to, you know, convert. It's using your legs. And so playing the position and throwing it well, doing all that, like, that's where, you know, the focus is for him. And I know he has great regard for Lamar, like a lot of us do. But yeah, they're not playing against each other. And so they're playing, you know, their groups against, you know, the respective defenses.
But when that scoreboard is going ching, 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 there is a little bit of that back and forth. There is a little bit of like, hey, I'm here too. And I think it's well put by Dan. That would be what I was telling him. But that game flow is going to be, you know, what's the score win? It's simply what that means. And obviously, like, you want to be ahead because then you're ahead. And being ahead is better than being behind. But it changes how the game goes. And that is something that I do think we will be discussing all week long here as we preview. And something that we'll be looking for during the game on Sunday. As for what's coming up on the rest of the show.
Still to come on the Hoffman Show.
Oh, we are getting adventurous. We are getting crazy. We're doing something we've never done before at 5 o'clock. Jason Lockenfora is one of the hosts of the afternoon show, Inside Access, up on our sister station, 105.7 in Baltimore. We are going to join their show live Beltway crossover event. If you were to flip back and forth in the Odyssey app, it'd sound the exact same for that 15 minutes coming up at 5 o'clock. So the Hoffman Show times Inside Access coming up at 5. But next, even before that, Ben Solak, ESPN, one of the smartest minds, new to ESPN, who's at the Ringer for a long time. I've known Ben for 5+ years, maybe even longer than that. Great, great football mind. And we're going to talk about how the Commanders have built this up so quickly and how their defense has him thinking that they could really be a contender this year. Solak next. Lockenfora and friends at 5. Clinton Yates at 6:30. We're loaded on a Wednesday, a competition Wednesday on The Hoffman Show.
The Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And you can watch us, if you like, on YouTube at the Team 980, where you see next to me on the screen, Mr. Ben Solak from ESPN. And Ben, if I had told you, let's say in, I don't know, mid-June-ish, sometime in that range of the offseason, maybe even August. If I had been like, hey, about week 5, week 6, I'm going to text you and be like, hey, you want to come on the show? And you're going to be like, heck yeah, I want to talk about the Washington Commanders. This is one of the most fun teams that I could talk about right now. What kind of drugs do you think I would have been on?
I would have said heck yeah because Craig Hoffman was asking me to come on the show. It's more about the host and the pals than it is about the in all seriousness, it is, right? It's a pleasant radio host to talk to, or it's an unpleasant experience. But it is a lot more fun to talk about the Commanders than I thought it would be. Absolutely, yes.
I know the offense is obviously the main driver of the fun. So let's start off with there. But I do want to talk about this defense and how they've turned things around from a pretty bad start, one of the worst TVOAs ever through the first couple weeks of the season, to being really good, even though it's been against some questionable, too, in the Cleveland's case, historically bad offenses the last couple of weeks. But Cliff Kingsbury is doing some things that I think people didn't necessarily expect. And I also think the thing that I'm curious to talk to you about, because you study this stuff from the X's and O's level, you talk to coaches, and I feel like when I listen to you, you have certain things that you really believe about football in a way that I appreciate. Like, you have a philosophy. How is Cliff accomplishing some of the things that fit the philosophy, maybe in different ways than other coaches have gone about it successfully in the last couple of years?
Yeah. So Cliff is a college coach who came up to the NFL, and it is important to understand that DNA, because there's stuff that NFL coaches, guys who've been in the incubator for two decades, three decades, are not willing to do that Cliff is willing to do. Right. And we see this whenever a college coach comes. You think about the Chip Kelly era and kind of that, you know, the way that spread system worked and that no huddle worked. Like, Cliff's running more bubble screens, more throws behind line of scrimmage than any other team in the league. Jane Daniels is scrambling more than any other quarterback in the league. They're running hurry up, no huddle more than any other team in the league. They're running RPOs, which RPO charting like kind of sucks, but from my eye, they're running RPOs more than anybody else in the league. Right. NFL coaches aren't willing to do this as much because it's simple and it's kind of, you know, it can get solved on the chalkboard and it doesn't actually give your quarterback progressions. And so if it gets, if the defense is in the right alignment, then you're kind of screwed and you can't get to like a backside this. And like, there's a big philosophical debate about like, can you be doing this? Should you be doing this? How long does this last? And, you know, Cliff was the head coach in Arizona for 4 years and he had some really nice stretches on offense. And then usually the Jenga tower came tumbling down at some point, right? So it is objectively very hard to be a college inspired coach, right? And I know like Cam Taylor Britt said, oh, it's a college offense. And we had to do a whole college offense, a pejorative thing for like a week. It just is like, there's no value statement for me on that. Like, as an Eagles fan, I love the Chip Kelly era. As a fan of football, I love like RPOs and quarterback read the option stuff getting involved in the NFL, but it is objectively a college offense. Like that's Cliff's background. That's the inspiration. So how long can Cliff make this last? Well, that depends on like, his ability to innovate and his ability to stay ahead of opposing defensive coordinators. This year, they're doing more pro-style-y stuff. I use that term like very, very loosely because, again, like college has this pejorative and pro doesn't. But they're like running more condensed formations. They're not nearly as spread out as they used to be in Arizona. If you look at like general formation width, they're doing a lot less like four open, four wide stuff. Like, oh, Cliff's an air raid guy. Well, they're not doing as many air raid formations as they used to. Like, you know, the four wide stuff with no tight end to back in the core of the formation. No, they're running multiple tight ends at a higher rate than he ever did at Arizona. Their formations are generally tighter. It allows them to be a lot more variable in the running game, right? So Cliff's absolutely like evolving and he's starting to graft more and more pro style stuff into what they're doing, into what the base of this offense is, which again, the base is a college offense. How long does that last? How is that sustainable? Is this going to work in the NFL the way that we typically haven't seen college offenses work? Ask me in 3 months and I'll let you know,
Right. If you were a defensive coordinator trying to put the clamps on it though, because that's the thing right now. And I was talking to a player in the locker room after the Cleveland game and he was just like, we're kind of doing everything well right now. It's like the screen game is good. The running game is good. The deep passing game is good. When they do go and drop back, like it's been good. So the fact that they are doing everything well, that if you dedicate resources one place, they have the counters available to them.
Right.
Is that any different than the good stretches that he had in Arizona that teams were eventually able to figure out? Is this something that only works if the quarterback stays on a hot streak forever?
Yeah.
Or is there something that is more sustainable that comes out of the way they're using formations, the way they're using personnel, that insulates it a little bit more than some of the problems he ran into later in seasons in Arizona?
Yeah, so this Cleveland game, I think, is a really good example because they put 34 points on the board, right? Now, if you look from a success rate perspective, right, just in terms of like generally how did the offense perform, one of their worst outings of the season. Not a good outing. I think it was 38.5% success rate or something like that. I might be wrong on that number. Yeah.
And just so the audience knows, success rate isn't a subjective thing. It's an objective stat that says based off the down and distance, did you reach a certain threshold that the people who created the stat said this is a successful play on said down and distance?
Yeah, the typical way it gets defined is, right, like 5 yards on first and 10, right, half of the yards on second down, right, all of the yards on third down. It's kind of basically saying, hey, an 8 yard gain is a lot more valuable on third and seven than it is on third and 16, right? It's pretty much what we're trying to say. And that's because, right, they had all these big explosives, a huge Jane Daniels scramble, huge Dummy Brown touchdown, huge Terry McLaurin catch, peppered inside a game that was a lot of run for 1 yards, run for negative 1 yards, right? But tagline line of scrimmage, right? Quick throw to Zach Ertz that gets dropped or broken up or whatever. And I think you saw Cleveland have that success because Cleveland was willing to play extremely fast and up near the line of scrimmage, right? And that's something that Cleveland personnel-wise is built to do. In the running game, that allows you to, we're going to shoot some gaps, right? This team wants to pull six guys and everything. Austin Eckler going this way and two tight ends going that way and Jay running this way. Okay, we're just going to blitz it, right? We are just going to go really fast to the mesh point. We're going to try to screw with the timing of all this and just be very disruptive. That gives up some big runs. Think about Austin Eckler, you know, a big long explosive run, but it also gets some tackles at or behind line of scrimmage, which is big for a defense. And then passing game wise, what that allows you to do, right, is you're very tight to Zach Ertz, you're very tight to Luke McCaffrey, you're really challenging some of these underneath throws, you're getting incompletions, you're forcing second and tens. The cost of doing business is, talk about the explosive runs, talk about the isolation throw to Deami Brown, you're going to leave yourself in some one-on-ones. As long as Jaden continues to be like really one of the best vertical throwers we've seen through five weeks of the season, they're going to continue to be able to score fast and score explosives. It might be herky jerky the way it was against the Browns. We have some three and out drives. Some drives are going backwards, all of a sudden 60 yard gain. But as long as Jaden can drop that ball in a bucket to Deami, unbelievable throw to Terry on the moves. Best throw I've ever seen from Jaden, college or pro. As long as we continue doing that, like they're going to be able to at least put explosives on the board, score fast and like keep pace with top teams. I'd be concerned about the down to down success, right? The kind of the in structure success of the offense. If they continue to struggle with these defenses that are willing to get really tight to line of scrimmage and kind of shove it in their face a little bit, right? Get aggressive, kind of blitz the mesh point and try to get some tackles for loss.
Right. But in a league that's built on explosives, if you're going to expose yourself to explosives against Jaden Daniels, seems like that is,
yeah,
that you're like the best option is to play with fire and hope you don't get burned. And that's not exactly sound parenting advice, if you will. Ben Solak, ESPN with us here on the Hoffman Show. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about real quick is someone who's studied quarterbacks like you have. And I think of guys like Stroud, obviously, who had such a fantastic rookie season. The thing that's blown me away about Jaden is how much he's improved week over week. And sometimes it feels like drive over drive, the ability to not make the same mistake twice. Can you remember anybody else or a certain small other group of guys who showed this kind of progression this quickly, fixing what were perceived as holes in their game?
That's a good question. Not really. I think, and I think a huge part of that credit goes to Jaden. I do want to not understate the part of the credit goes to Cliff, right? As I was a guy who was critical of Cliff for a lot of his time in Arizona. I did not like the hire for Washington. I think he's largely making me shut up. But one of the things that Cliff's always had is Cliff is really, really good at getting his quarterback to see it, right? He was a quarterback's coach, right? When he was, before he was a head coach at Texas Tech, and then in his time between Arizona and Washington, he was there with Caleb Williams. Cliff's very, very good at getting his quarterback to understand what it is that Cliff wants from this, right? He is a good teacher, a good communicator of, okay, if we get X, do Y, if we get Y, do Z. And then Cliff's also very comfortable telling his quarterback, and if you don't like it, tuck it, run, and like we'll get to another down, right? And so I think Cliff is a really good guy to have in Jaden's ear, because I think there's a lot of quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators in the league right now who would see Jaden scrambling as much as Jaden scrambling, and you know, Jaden will tuck and run when there's open receivers downfield, and would get like upset about that and want to fix that. And Cliff's just very happy living with that, right? He doesn't mind picking up yardage that way. And so I think Cliff is a big part of why you're seeing Jaden. Yeah, like Jaden's eyes are good and he's seeing things fast and he's not replicating the same mistakes, repeating the same mistakes over and over. I think Cliff's a big part of that. And then I also think Jaden's a big part of that. But you ask like, you know, do guys develop like this? The answer is no. And I think that one, that's great news because it's awesome. I think also two, it's kind of bad news because there are some bad Jaden games coming down the stretch. And I don't say that for any other reason besides this is the NFL and it's very hard, right? There's kind of there's two realities right now for Washington fans. One, Jaden's the best rookie quarterback of all time. Or two, there's going to be some bumps in this road, right? And like, unfortunately, one is just remarkably more likely than the other. And so I like, you know, I think you're going to see some games where the interception numbers go up, right? Because the downfield completion numbers go down. This offense gets stuck in the mud a little bit more. The running game doesn't work as well. They have to deal with a lot of third and drop back. They have to deal with some more pass protection the way that this line's been performing well, but I'm not sure it's the best in like drop back pass protection. And they're going to have some bad games. I think it's going to get herky jerky. If you can continue to ride those waves, now we've got a guy who really, like, you know, has his head screwed on straight, can develop well. That's the makings of a franchise quarterback.
Yeah. How he handles that is everything. And that dude, the thing that I think has changed specifically about that position, that like anytime I talk about, and hopefully if I'm here, I won't have to talk about quarterbacks in a draft for 10 years. But you know, the thing that I will look at in future drafts much more is like, I want to know about guys' work habits. I want to know about the mentality and kind of everything up here in a way that I always knew was really important, but just see how he does it. And you're like, oh, I get it now. Like, it's just, there's a prerequisite of like getting there at 4 a.m. that it, your ceiling or your floor then becomes like Alex Smith, and your ceiling is what we're seeing with Jaden right now when you work like that and your process is good. Defensively though, they started really poor and have turned things around. And I know that you're impressed by some of the things that they've been able to find. What is it that you see that, that makes you believe that it's not just, hey, Kyler had a bad day. When Kyler has a bad day, they're really bad. And Cleveland's one of the worst offenses we've ever seen, that there's actually improvement on the Washington side of it.
I think that, right. They have a few peak players, especially in the front seven. I think like John Allen and Jerome Payne, I think everybody knows about. Frankie Louvu has been lights out, dude. Frankie, man, I was worried about the transition out of like, oh, we're a 3-4 team. We're, you know, we have the spot for this like outside linebacker, off ball linebacker hybrid, Frankie Louvu. Like, that's what he was in Carolina. Go to Washington, it's Dan Quinn. And you're just like, all right, like, so you can be a full time edge rusher, you can be a full time off ball backer. Like, that's never been Frankie's game. I kind of don't know how this is going to work. Frankie's been excellent for them. He's unbelievable off ball, looks delightful. And so, like, those three guys are creating enough splash plays for them that they get opportunities ahead of the six to get off of the field, right? Like, Washington's defense is still like absolute last in the league and like explosive run rate surrendered, but they're also like up there in terms of like tackle for loss and stuffs, right? So it's kind of, you're living with a double-edged sword there. It's okay. Sometimes we give up these big runs, we give up these chunk gains, and they're putting points on the board. Sometimes you can get to second and 12. Sometimes you can get to third and nine. And then let's see if we can win that down. I think that the changes at corner have been good for them, right? I don't think Mikey Sanderstall is the best outside corner in the league. I don't think that's the best spot for him. I don't think Noah Igbinoghene is the best slot corner in the league. But like, I think it's kind of better than some of the guys they had out there previously and the targets that were on their backs, right, in terms of opposing offenses. So I think that's given you a little bit of breathing room. Quan and Chin are playing well, playing fast. They're hitting their big guys, right? And that's like really nice to have in this defense where you're asking those guys to make a lot of tackles in space. So they have enough splash players, especially in the front seven, that they're getting penetration, they're getting stops, they're able to get off the field often enough that this offense can kind of get a lead built because they're scoring on every single freaking drive. And then all of a sudden, you know, the opposing team's in pass, and now you can just rush the passer, Dan Quinn go crazy. I'm really interested to see what happens in a game for this defense where the script isn't as nice, right? They're not nursing a multi-score lead for the entire second half, which has been the case for most of the Bengals game, all of the Cardinals game, and then all of the Browns game. That's kind of where we've seen the improvement kind of come over the last few weeks. And I think Baltimore is a good test for that, right? Where I think even if this offense is producing well against Baltimore, Baltimore's going to slow the game down, right? They're going to run the football a lot. They're going to eat some clock. I don't think you're going to see them, you know, down 17 to the Commanders at halftime. And I think it's going to put more stress on this defense over the course of four quarters. So excited to see it.
So let's talk about this Baltimore game real quick. Ben Solak, ESPN with us. And I think the full range of outcomes is on the table. I would say blowout either way is less likely than close game. If I had to pick one blowout, I'd probably pick Baltimore still. Sorry, Commanders fans. But I pick Baltimore blowing out Washington. They just could play at an intensity that Washington hasn't experienced yet, and Baltimore's playoff tested, et cetera, et cetera. But I do look at the 31st ranked pass defense for Baltimore and go, I don't know, this Washington pass offense pretty darn good. They're the best scoring team in the league so far. So I guess it is possible. What matchup or, you know, part phases of the game going against each other do you think is or are the ultimate determinants in the Washington-Baltimore matchup?
Yeah, I think the best thing that Commanders have done through the first 5 weeks has just been really, really good in the handoff game and the read option game, just running the football, right? Stay ahead of the sticks, get you to your RPO game, get you to your play action pass game, and then Jaden hits his explosives. The Ravens are a pass funnel defense. They see more dropbacks over expectation than any defense in the league because this run defense is really, really, really good. So the first thing to find out is, okay, where are you going to find your easy buckets on first and 10, right? I think it's going to be a lot fewer, not a lot, but significantly fewer Brian Robinson runs and Austin Eckler runs and a lot more Luke McCaffrey screens and Terry McLaurin screens and Dyami Brown screens, and trying to find ways to just keep the base offense moving, right? Convert the first down and kind of get your sea legs under you. So that tackling game that you're going to have there on the boundary is going to be a big deal. If they can run the football in Baltimore, go for it. It's just nobody really has been able to do that yet. If you're in a bad spot now, if you're facing more third and longs and whatever, it becomes a really important game for the non-Terry McLaurin wide receivers, because Baltimore has just like, they'll leave Brandon Stevens on an island on the outside. Now they have rookie corner Nate Wiggins, who's actually looked pretty good through the first couple of weeks. He's back from injury, but they'll leave him alone on the outside. They'll leave Marlon Humphrey in the slot, and they'll basically just say like, hey, pick your matchup and see if you can beat one of our guys. And like, Stevens is not the strongest guy at the catch point. Wiggins is a rookie. Marlon's pretty good in the slot. But like, if this is the sort of game where you'd like to be able to look at Dyami Brown, look at Olamide Zaccheaus, and say like, hey, you got to go get us a bucket on third and eight. And the Commanders have been very surprisingly good at that. I feel like they're Luke McCaffrey's and Diami's of the world. Of the things that I'm suspicious of this Commanders team, that's pretty high up there, where I'm looking at these receivers like, okay, like, there's a third round rookie. This is a, you know, Diami was kind of like viewed as a bust and like not necessarily making room. Olamide Zaccheaus was like a low tier free agent. How are these guys finding so much success right now in the passing game? So it's going to be important for those guys, I think, to win on your late down. So it's an important game for Cliff in terms of scheming up the easy yardage. And then it's going to be a very important game for those alternate receivers, those second receivers besides Terry, winning their one-on-one matchups. Jaden scrambling is not going to save you in this game, because Baltimore is extremely disciplined on defense against scrambling quarterbacks, right? This team plays Lamar exclusively for like 2 months in the summer, all right? They care very, very deeply about rushing the quarterback intelligently, keeping him in the pocket, right? Don't, like, you saw the Browns fly at Jaden and just like, Jaden would just go out the back door and now there's three Browns on the ground. There's so much space downfield. Baltimore's right. Not going to give you that. So Jaden scrambling is not going to save you as much as you want in this game. So you have to be better kind of on script a little bit. That's going to be the matchup there.
And then when you flip the field, can Washington, like, they've been better against the run. They're also very susceptible to very specific runs, some of these traps and whams and pulling, you know, pin pull type of stuff. And Cleveland just didn't run them, which thanks, Kevin Stefanski. Yeah. Appreciate you for that one. How do you think that they can do enough against Lamar and Henry in the running game to kind of do what Cincinnati tried and make Lamar have back-to-back, like, hey, we'll beat you with big explosive passing play type of games?
Right, yeah. So this Baltimore team has had 38 straight games of rushing for 100 yards. The first team in, I want to say, almost 20 years now to have 1,000 rushing yards through the first 5 weeks and average 6 yards per carry. You're not going to stop the running game. What's important is to not let the 10-yard runs become 50-yard runs, specifically with Derrick Henry, right? You can't let them get to the third level and get some steam. Like I said, Kwon and Chin are big safeties. Nobody's big when it comes to tackling Derrick Henry when he's got momentum. And so you really have to be able to, you know, kind of batter him and slow him down and gang tackle him there in the second level. Don't let him break to the third level. So firstly, just don't give up the game-winning run that he had against the Bengals. Don't give up the first run that he had against the Bills. You cannot let the choo-choo train get moving in the third level. So if that's what you do in the box, right, you really try to just like, you're going to have to live with 5 yard runs, just trying to let them be 15, 20, 50, 75. And then in the passing game, yeah, like the Ravens have been pretty good this year. Lamar's playing excellent football, throwing the football, but like 1 week they're a Zay Flowers team. The next week they're an Isaiah Likely team. The following week they're a Justice Hill team. They're kind of very designery in the passing game. They kind of get to one matchup that they like and they try to hammer it as best they can. They're not very versatile. They're not great going through their progressions. It's usually Lamar getting outside of the pocket and then creating the scramble drill. And so you have to figure out where they're going to pressure point you. I think it's going to be a Justice Hill sort of a day, throwing the ball to the back, kind of a lot of this, take advantage of the aggressiveness of that front and then go misdirection and kind of get the ball out early. And so you have to be able to tackle really well in space. You have to be able to adjust to that when you see it on the fly. Like Monken is usually really good in the first quarter, and then you can catch up to him in the second, the third, and the fourth. And so it's a big Dan Quinn day for figuring out what's going on.
That's going to be definitely interesting to watch. And then last but not least, and sorry, we're going to make this a little short because of time here, Ben, but we want people to read the article anyway. You did a proposed trades column for ESPN.com. I believe you had a Commanders proposed trade. What's the short version of that we can send people to the internet to read if they want the long version?
Yeah, well, I think that this team, it's funny, they were the biggest sellers last year because this team was nowhere. The second you get a Jaden Daniels in the building, you're like, all right, we have a 4 or 5 year rookie window, let's go. And you become the biggest buyers in the world, right? Like in a heartbeat. I have them adding T. Higgins. I think the Bengals are going to be in a spot where they might have to blow it up by the end of this month. And just right now you have no kind of ball winner on the outside. Like Terry's unbelievable. I love Terry to death, but Terry's like not the biggest guy, not like, you know, win above the rim sort of a dude. And if you add a T. Higgins to this team, like, and you have the ability to play him outside, you get to move Terry into the slot a little bit more, you kind of bump, you don't have to ask Olamide and Diami and Noah Brown to do as much they've been doing so far for you this year. I think that this team construction starts to look a lot more viable. And so I have them trading for T. I think they should be on every single, like, Devontae talks, they should be there. Amari Cooper talks, they should be there. Just if the price is right, the best guy for them is T. He's a little bit younger, and I think he fits best, but this team should add a receiver for sure.
Yeah, no, it's so tempting. I also am just like, I want to give Adam Peters every draft pick possible to let him just draft dudes. Don't get impatient, but
it's a great idea. It's a lovely idea, but what the clock is ticking already on the rookie window.
On the rookie,
you know, totally. If you know for sure a guy is good in the NFL, that certainty is very important at this stage in your team building. And so absolutely keep some picks, but you want to spend a second round pick on some guy from Michigan who might be a good pass catcher? You want to spend on T. Higgins? I know what I want to do.
I totally get that that line of thinking as well. Ben Solak, you can read his work, ESPN.com, frequent guest on many of the ESPN's podcasts as well. Mina and the whole crew over there, catch him on TV. He's a big superstar now. Ben, appreciate you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
It's the Hoffman Show on Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And Anthony's doing something important right now. So once he's done with that, I have a request for Anthony. And then I have an announcement to make. There's a lot going on. So we need to make sure that we're ready for 12 minutes from now when Jason Lockenfora and friends from the Inside Access show on 105.7 The Fan, their afternoon show, their Hoffman show, except for they have three people and thus it's not named after anybody. But Inside Access, the afternoon show on 105.7 in Baltimore, we are going to be live on both stations, the first ever Beltway crossover with the biggest game of the NFL weekend coming. So that is coming up at 5 o'clock. Competition Wednesday. I'll tell you this right now. The wheel of mediocre punishment is on my side of proceedings. It's in my studio, not Anthony's. And I think I'm very scared it's going to stay here. So we'll pick some more games. I will spin the wheel. We will determine what my punishment is. I really hope I don't have to do 100 pushups again. Honestly, if I have to do 100 pushups again, I might just reject it. And to be like, at the very least, I'll do them tomorrow. But we're gonna figure that out. Coming up at 5:30, 6 o'clock, you will hear from Jaden Daniels and Dan Quinn in our pick six. And then coming up at 6:30, Clinton Yates joins us for his Wednesday visit. Okay, Anthony, the request I have for you, sir, is I know Mitch Tischler is not secretly coming back, but I would like the air horns if they are easily accessible because we have a big announcement to make about the show tomorrow. And I believe it is air horns worthy. And if we're stealing Tischler's air horns, it must be a pretty big announcement.
Okay, give me 2 seconds.
Okay. In 2 seconds, Anthony will have the air, not the practice horn, Anthony. Not the brrr, practice is over. Not
that
one.
You sure you don't want those?
I mean, if you have it, just a.
Nah, I won't give you those.
Okay. It is going to be after practice tomorrow, if that's a hint to anybody. After practice, after the practice horn blows. Air horns, please. Commanders receiver De'Ami Brown is going to join us. So that is 4 o'clock. Oh, more air horns. You know what else I think it deserves?
Did you put the LeBron James scream on there?
No. Is it in the system for me to put on there?
I can't put it on your board.
No, I know. But is it in white orbit?
Maybe not.
Oh, if it's not in the system, I can't put something that's not in the pool of available selections. It's like drafting someone who's not draft eligible.
Yeah.
Can you please make the LeBron scream draft eligible?
I got you.
De'Ami Brown, tomorrow, 4 o'clock. Very excited about that. He really worked his butt off in this offseason and has been working really hard. So to see him start to have some of that payoff, I am excited to talk to De'Ami. So that will be tomorrow, 4 p.m. here on the Team 980. As for right now, a little bit more on Jaden Daniels and getting ready for this game for the Commanders against the Ravens. And it was funny. You heard Solak talk about, hey, this team practices exclusively against Lamar Jackson for a couple of months every summer in training camp. So you'd think that they would be prepared for, what Jaden can do. So what are the similarities between Jaden and Lamar? Dan Quinn asked about that today.
I would say if I had to pick one that both of these two are elite competitors, like at the highest level. And that shows on the tape. You know, the way they extend plays, the way they finish, the way they lead their group. So that's the part. If I was to make a comparison, it would be something intangible like that. Both of them have their own unique ways about them. But in this game, there's all these guys are fantastic competitors. And then, like in most profession, there's the elite, and these two guys are elite at it.
No doubt about it. The absolute, like, never say die attitude, never give up on a play. It matters at the quarterback position, and especially when you have their skill sets where, you know, there's the touchdown that Lamar throws to Likely in the Cincy game where he is It looks like he's running out of bounds. And in the last second, he sees Likely in the end zone. He's just like, boop, back across. Jaden, the 3rd and 13, same thing. Like, let me just roll out here. Oh, Terry's open down the field. Let's launch one 56 yards. It's the best throw that arguably he's ever made in his life. You know, he never had a 50-plus air yard pass in college. Now he's got 2 in 3 weeks, one against Cincinnati on Monday Night Football, and then the other one to Terry the other night or the other day against Cleveland. And so that competitive nature from the scrambles to the throws to the late throws, late and downs, the refusal to go down in the pocket, all that stuff adds up. So how do you deal with a guy like that? This is Dan Quinn's short-ish answer on dealing with Lamar Jackson.
It does a lot, and I had this conversation yesterday with somebody. When you can extend the plays, that obviously, you know, changes how you go about things. And so some quarterbacks need extra, you know, people for spy. Sometimes you want to have zone where there's vision to go, and it's the second play usually that can be the most challenging. A first play may begin as a pass, and then as the second one begins, outside the pocket. And he has just had remarkable, you know, success, you know, with his arm and with his legs. And so, yeah, he is absolutely a threat.
One thing that I have noticed about the Commanders' defense is they, I don't know that they're going to use a ton of direct spies. I mean, Lamar's his own, like his own unique guy. So maybe against him, you do it. The problem with a spy is it takes a player out of both the coverage structure and the rush. So you're shorthanded on the rush because you don't have maximal players rushing because one's spying. But that's a sacrifice you're willing to make if it gives you an extra body in coverage. Well, instead, that guy's not in coverage. He's just standing there waiting on the quarterback, who, by the way, might be fast enough to outrun him to the perimeter anyway. What the Commanders have done well so far this year is in situations where plays get extended, they've got guys that will fire down and meet the quarterback. So last week, there's a play where Deshaun Watson is rolling to his right, extending the play, and Percy Butler, who is roaming the middle of the field, was like, well, I don't really do a whole lot of good here anymore. He's not going to throw back across his body to the middle of the field as he rolls away from it. And so he, at 4.3 speed, just fires down into the box, and he winds up getting, I think he gets like a shove on Watson, but he forces a throw. And so I think that, you know, playing zone, keeping eyes on the quarterback, having the bodies where you want them, not being shorthanded in coverage or in your rush is definitively the better plan. Now, certain situations, would you put Luvu? Would you put Chin? Would you put Butler? Would you put Bobby Wagner, who's just brain-wise, like able to see lanes and angles and all that stuff really well? As a spy, it's definitely a possibility. We'll talk about this matchup much more next here on the Team 980. We cross over, our first ever live crossover with 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. So both shows live next.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.